Welcome to Unspoken. Today, I am honoured to be joined by Dr. Abraham Zavala, who is a gynaecology fertility specialist at Tambray. Now, from an early age, Dr. Abraham knew he wanted to pursue a career in medicine and found his true passion, reproductive medicine. During his training, he discovered his interest in helping women and couples along their journey towards parenthood, which led him to specialise in fertility. Now, Dr. Abraham has worked across three different countries while studying and also practicing in this area. And today, as part of the Tambray team, he not only contributes through his knowledge and experience in complex cases such as repeated implantation failure or recurrent pregnancy loss, but also with his empathy and commitment to each patient. Now, Dr. Zavala talks about his work and how he and his team treat each patient at Tambray with a comprehensive, human and attentive approach. Now, we are also really thrilled that Season 2 is sponsored by Tambray, and they are a leading assisted reproduction centre based in Madrid. Tambray believes that fertility care should be both advanced and deeply human, and they combine cutting-edge science with a personalised, compassionate approach, helping individuals and couples from around the world make their dream of parenthood a reality. And Dr. Abraham is located in the Alicante branch of Tambray. So in today's episode, we delve into what a fertility journey could look like when going through things like IVF, going over some of those baseline tests, but also talking about dealing with implantation failure, but also for those considering or unsure about treatment abroad, Dr. Abraham gives some advice. Now, we hope you find this episode helpful and useful. Thank you for listening. Welcome to Unspoken, and we're so pleased that you can join us today, Dr. Abraham. So lovely to have you here. And before we get into the conversation, it'd be great if you could tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do and why you do it.
Yeah, of course. Well, first of all, I'm very glad to be here. So thanks for your invitation. And yeah, my name's Abraham Zavala. I'm a gynecologist that I've been specialized in the field of assisted reproduction over the last 8 years, just about. And we are based in Clínica Tambray in Alicante, so southeastern Spain. I don't know if you're aware, but Clínica Tambray has been around for over 45 years now. Our main clinic is in the capital city of Spain, in Madrid. But we've recently opened our doors in sunny Alicante, and yeah, we're very happy to be here now.
Brilliant. And I think that sounds lovely just by saying you're on the coast, you're in Alicante. I'm thinking sunshine, nice weather, a nice...
Yeah, definitely.
A nice setting for a clinic, and I imagine, you know, it makes it such a difference, especially for people that are coming from abroad.
Yeah, and you know, I think that sometimes something that we don't really factor into treatment, especially fertility treatment, is, you know, kind of setting some time apart to like unplug and just kind of focus on your treatment, being away from your daily routine. And I think that's important, and I think that's something that we can offer here in Alicante.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And I suppose it's, you know, from your background, and you know, you've obviously done loads of studies and to get to your position that you are, what's your why? Why do you do the work that you do?
Well, I've been around the general branch of gynecology for a while. I guess that's how I could explain it in a nutshell. So I was born in Mexico, grew up in the U.S. Did part of my medical training both in Mexico and in the U.S. in the state of California. And then I did my OBGYN residency in Mexico. I came to Spain on a scholarship to do my fellowship in assisted reproduction, and then spent a few years kind of doing my obstetrics and gynecology residents all over to get it validated here in Spain. So I've been in this field for a while, and I must say that assisted reproduction has always been a type of calling, because I remember early on in my residency, I would always be interested in what was going on in the fertility clinic. I used to love being in the lab, seeing the cells at the very beginning. And I always found it so interesting seeing those embryos develop and achieving pregnancy with these kind of like very specialized techniques. And so I've kind of made it my calling to specialize in this area ever since I got out of OBGYN.
Yeah. So it sounds like you've been quite a journey, and you've seen healthcare in America, in Mexico, and now Spain. And I suppose it is something quite magical work in this space, because you get to see people's dreams come true. So, you know, you probably meet such a wide variety of patients and clients. And I suppose it's for someone who is starting out on a fertility journey, what would be some of your kind of top tips or advice for anyone who's thinking about it or is starting to navigate this space?
Well, I think that it's very important to, in a sense, keep calm when trying to get more information about achieving pregnancy and about fertility. We come across strong terms that we can, you know, that we can see when we're, you know, Googling information or trying to find out information about why, you know, pregnancy just hasn't arrived for whatever reason. And I think that, you know, when seeking actual medical advice, it's always important to go someplace where there's a lot of experience in the vast assisted reproduction techniques. I think that that's something that sometimes we don't think about, but looking for a place where the doctors there have loads of experience is always something very important, and it helps it helps us guide our patients in so many ways by being able to transmit that kind of know-how of what the options are.
Yeah, and I suppose, and you're based out in Spain, but in the UK, we have organisations like the HFEA who do give a bit of guidance on the different clinics and what to expect. And I suppose I'm thinking back. So I had it was 10 years ago this month that I started on my first round of IVF. And I think it's just knowing that, I think as a patient, you can do your own research. You don't have to go with the first clinic, and making sure you feel comfortable with the doctor you're working with. So I think that, yeah, those aspects are really important as a patient. And I suppose is with that, sometimes there are misconceptions what people think will be involved or what they expect to be involved. And I wonder, what are some of the common ones that you come across?
Yeah, and just coming back to your point, because you mentioned the HFEA, and I think that each clinic is going to operate, you know, within the clinical and legal framework in which they're based. So, for example, for us, we work under this the Spanish law and the Spanish guidelines and ultimately other European associations. But I think that's something that the HFEA does very well is explain to patients, you know, with all the noise out there, with all the different techniques that they may encounter or that they may be proposed, they're really good at explaining, you know, what's evidence-based and what may be appropriate and what kind of lacks that kind of robust evidence to back up those techniques. And I think that that's something very important in a field such as assisted reproduction that just constantly progresses and incorporates new technology and I think that that's something important. And going back to your question about, you know, some of the common misconceptions, I think that there are a few that I get a lot from the patients that I talk to, and even, you know, social media and everywhere you look, basically. I think that one of these misconceptions would be that fertility is mainly a female issue. And in fact, this is in fact something that even other clinicians can kind of, you know, fall into. But we have to remember that, you know, if we look at all the different problems that we may encounter when trying to achieve pregnancy, nearly 30 to 50% are going to involve male fertility. So I think that that's one of the most, the more important misconceptions that we need to get rid of, because it can impact the way that we approach a couple that's struggling with infertility.
Absolutely agree. And I think as a society, we are getting better at understanding that, but there is still a mass amount of misconception. And also, when you think about the levels of tests that I also done, if a couple comes, for example, to a fertility clinic, there'll be a lot more tests done on a woman than there will be on a male. And so I suppose some things can go undetected from the male side. And I suppose it's, again, going back to that question, if someone's embarking on their journey as a male and female, what are some of the additional tests that a male can get which could uncover any other issues?
So most of the times, the tests that we would perform on male partners would be a basic sperm analysis. Okay. With the sperm analysis, we would measure concentration, motility, which is the percentage of sperm cells that have the adequate movement, and morphology, or the amount of normal looking sperm cells. Okay, this is one of the more important tests that we would use to analyze semen quality. We would also test for the blood type, and this can be more relevant in cases such as, for example, egg donation. But it is something that we routinely test. And finally, we would do an infectious disease panel. So things like HIV, hepatitis B, hepatitis C, and syphilis are things that we would analyze. Of course, this doesn't always give us the full picture of what the problem may be, or if there's something that is coming from the male partner that could have an impact on why we're not achieving pregnancy. So there are other things that we could test for, things like a hormonal analysis, the karyotype, to make sure that the male partner has the correct number of chromosomes. And also things like fragmentation testing, the way that DNA is packed within the sperm cells.
Yeah, and I suppose those can definitely, especially if you're someone who's experienced miscarriage, those kind of tests are going to be quite critical. But from a female perspective, what would be some of the baseline tests that they would have done and would need to consider to really, I suppose, to support them before they go into things like IVF treatment?
Yeah. So before we can, you know, talk about treating, it's first we need to identify what the issue may be. Okay. And I think that you bring up a great question, because one of the first things that we're going to do is see whether there's anything that we can identify as a potential obstacle in achieving pregnancy. And I'd first like to, you know, say that, you know, when would be the right time to even, you know, go to a fertility specialist or to a fertility clinic? Well, what we call infertility is really a time period. of about 12 months in women under 35 or 6 months in women over 35. And that's the time period after when we haven't achieved pregnancy in that set time period. That's when we recommend that, that you go to a fertility specialist. Of course, if there are any underlying conditions such as PCOS, which is polycystic ovarian syndrome, or endometriosis, or fibroids, or polyps, or anything like that, it's probably a good idea to go earlier to get some fertility guidance. Now, when we approach a fertility issue, we would always try to do an ultrasound scan, okay, to see the uterus, to see the lining, to look at the ovaries, right? To make sure that there isn't anything that we would think that would be creating an obstacle in achieving pregnancy. Then we would do some blood tests. We would do ovarian reserve testing. We can do this through a blood test called the AMH or anti-Müllerian hormone and through the ultrasound scan. We would also do a hormonal profile to see if there are any hormones that may be affecting ovulation or implantation. So hormones such as prolactin, TSH, FSH, LH, estradiol, all of these hormones we would analyze to see if there's anything abnormal going on. Okay. We would also look at the patient's weight and calculate their BMI to see if they may be underweight or overweight, as both of those extremes could have an impact on fertility. Okay. And then we would also do other tests, again, such as the karyotype, to look at the chromosome analysis to make sure that she has the correct number of chromosomes. We would do some general blood testing, such as, kidney function, liver function, cholesterol levels, and an infectious disease panel.
Wow, so those are extensive number of tests, and I suppose there'll be some listeners who are not familiar with some of these terms. So just taking a step back to the hormone profile for a woman. So some of the AMH, FSH, what are some of the critical hormones that play a part in a woman's cycle, which people might need to understand when going through fertility treatment?
So we need to imagine the hormone testing as a type of balance that your body has to be in, right? For it to function correctly, especially in terms of fertility. And we would basically have two groups of hormone testing. So on one hand, we would have the ovarian reserve testing. Okay. And for the ovarian reserve testing, we would look at a hormone called the AMH, okay, and an ultrasound scan in which we would count the amount of follicles that we can see on each ovary. These aren't fertility tests in the sense that they're not going to tell us whether that woman can achieve pregnancy or not, but it's going to tell us the amount of follicles or the amount of eggs that we could expect. And this is going to be important when deciding what medication to give her and what amount of medication. Okay, so that's one type of hormonal analysis. And the other hormonal analysis is going to see how these hormones can impact ovulation and implantation. Okay, so we're going to measure hormones such as the TSH, which is the thyroid hormone, and also prolactin, because these can affect in one way or another the regularity of your ovulation. Okay, and then we're going to measure FSH, LH, and estradiol, because these hormones are going to tell us how your ovary is responding to your own hormonal stimulus.
And I think it's, thank you for explaining that. And I think for And I know when I started out, I did not have the depth of knowledge and understanding I have after my first round of my own cycle, and you know what hormones kick in when and their impact and what can impact the level of hormones. So I think, yeah, for anyone starting out, I would encourage anyone to understand it, and not just for a female, but also for a male, so they know end to end what happens when and what, where, you know, some aspects of treatment, what might be needed or not needed. And so I know you explain the baseline tests and things people might want to consider when they're starting out on a journey. But I suppose when someone's going through treatment, so I know there's different levels and different types of medication that would be involved. Could you talk a little bit around what are some of the sort of the standard medications? Because I know a lot of people will associate fertility treatment with, you know, the injections and so tell us a bit more about that.
So you know, even though it may be a bit, you know, convoluted or a bit complex, you know, it is important to try and, you know, get a basic understanding of the way that our hormones work. Because most of the medication that we're going to use in any type of fertility treatment, whether it be IVF, artificial insemination, egg donation, or embryo transfers, we're going to use some hormones, and depending on what we're trying to do, is the hormones that we may choose to use. Okay, so it's important that we understand that on a very basic level, and in a way of oversimplification, a woman's brain is going to produce an FSH hormone, okay? And this hormone is going to stimulate the follicles within the ovaries. That's what FSH is, follicle stimulating hormone. This hormone is going to make that follicle start to grow. Normally, out of a selected cohort that your ovary has, one follicle will kind of absorb all of that FSH, and that'll become the dominant follicle. That follicle is going to start to produce estrogen, and that estrogen is going to make the endometrial lining grow. Okay, once that follicle ovulates, once it releases the egg inside of it, that follicle is going to start producing progesterone instead of estrogen, okay? And that progesterone that new follicle is producing is going to prepare the lining for implantation, okay? So that's a very basic overview of how the hormonal cycle works. That means that when we're trying to get our follicles to grow so that we can get as many eggs as possible for an IVF stimulation cycle, we're going to use those hormones, basically FSH and LH, okay? But when we're trying to prepare the endometrial lining for an embryo transfer, we're going to use a combination of estrogen and progesterone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so yeah, the key ones are obviously the estrogen, the progesterone, and those will help grow the follicle. So typically a woman will grow one or two follicles a month, but with IVF treatment, it's actually pushing your ovaries to produce more than it normally would. So those eggs can be harvested and used for fertility treatment and also for a fresh transfer, but also for future frozen embryo transfers. And you know, there are, and for me, it's always been up until that point. So you have the medication, you have your egg collection. So that's where you had the surgical procedure to extract the eggs, and then the whole fertilization process. Talk to me a little bit about what's involved with that. So what does that mean, and how can that look, and how could that impact things like success?
So fertilization is going to be one of the key steps in any fertility treatment, whether you're undergoing IVF or whether you're undergoing egg donation, we will have to go through the fertilization process. And that's when the sperm and the egg cell combine with each other, okay? We can only fertilize mature eggs, okay? Unfortunately, not all the follicles that we use during an egg collection procedure, not all of them are going to have a mature egg inside of those follicles, okay? But it's the mature follicles that we will be able to fertilize. Now, there are two ways in which we can fertilize and a mature egg. One is through what we call conventional IVF, and that means placing the egg in contact with a few sperm cells, okay? And then checking to see whether that egg is fertilized. And the other way is the ICSI procedure, which is a sperm microinjection into the egg cell. And for that procedure, the embryologist is going to, under the microscope, choose a specific sperm cell and physically place it within the egg cell. Regardless of whether we've performed ICSI or conventional IVF, 24 hours later, we would know how many of the eggs were actually fertilized. And these are the eggs that we will, or these are the embryos that we will follow over the next days to see how many of those become day 3 or day 5 embryos.
Yeah. And I suppose that's the sort of the aim, is to get to day 5. And that's the kind of the best stage for the embryos to get to, because they've matured, they've kind of stood the test of time. And I suppose it's that point, it's the whole grading process, the embryos.
We also have to remember that naturally it would be a day 5 embryo that actually attaches to the lining. So that's really the embryo that we want to transfer.
Hmm. And then, you know, it's, for me, it's always been a case of up to the transfer of the embryo, everything I suppose that could be done has been done. And and for me, it feels like it's a real case of luck whether the embryo will attach. But yeah, equally, is there anything at this stage that a patient can do to increase their chances of implantation?
Of course. Unfortunately, with IVF, or you know, with any fertility treatment, there's always a bit of a trickle-down effect, in the sense that, you know, you start out with a number of follicles, and usually you'll get a little bit less eggs than the number of follicles that you see. Sadly, not all of those eggs might be mature. And then out of the mature eggs that we do collect, not all of them are going to make it to day 3 or to day 5 embryos called blastocysts. But when we do arrive at that blastocyst stage, whether we have one embryo or however number of embryos that we have available for transfer, that's a bit of a point at which we can decide what the next step could be. Whether we want to do a fresh embryo transfer, that means 5 days after the egg collection to transfer the embryo, or whether we want to shed that lining and prepare it in a kind of a milder way, what we call a frozen embryo transfer. And depending on what the underlying cause for infertility may be, we may decide on one or the other, and we may decide to prepare the lining and with a specific protocol.
Yeah. And I suppose there's a, you know, when I, again, going back to when I first started, I didn't even think that it was an option to, you know, do the collection, create the embryos and then wait. So I suppose what would be the factors that would define whether it's better to have a fresh embryo transfer or better to maybe skip a month or so and have a frozen one?
And, you know, when answering this question, I do think that it's important to, you know, always keep in mind that there isn't such a thing as a perfect protocol, okay? So we always have to decide on the protocol that we want to use based on the context that we're in, right? So for some women, a fresh embryo transfer may be ideal, okay? But for other women, it may make more sense to do a frozen embryo transfer, right? Women that are at risk of hyperstimulation syndrome, so women that responded way too well to the medication that we use during stimulation, it may not be ideal to do a fresh embryo transfer because we may place them at risk of developing ovarian hyperstimulation syndrome, which wouldn't be ideal. Women that may be undergoing pre-implantation genetic testing, which is a genetic analysis of the embryo, since the result usually takes a couple of weeks, it would make sense to freeze the embryos while we get the results and then do a frozen embryo transfer. Or women that, for whatever reason, had a premature exposure to progesterone because they had a premature ovulation or because they were using progesterone as part of their stimulation protocol. That would be an ideal situation for a fresh embryo transfer.
Yeah. And I think what it essentially is, everyone is so individual and got so many different factors that the doctors would need to consider in making some of these decisions. But I suppose, what are some of the common challenges that patients face going through this whole treatment process, because there are so many steps and there are so many things that can impact? And I know things like implantation failure people do experience quite commonly, and you know, what would be some of your advice with that, but also any other challenges?
So I think that, you know, that's an important question, because even when, you know, when everything seems to be right on paper, we can still face certain challenges. And that's why it's important to always remember that, you know, IVF isn't 100% guaranteed, a guaranteed success, and neither is egg donation, right? In fact, with, like many other things in biology, there are very few procedures or treatments that, you know, have a 100% success rate. And unfortunately, fertility treatments isn't an exception to that concept. So I think that, you know, some of the challenges that we see in patients is when there's an underlying disease that or an underlying condition that may be affecting fertility. So, you know, things like endometriosis or multiple fibroids that are growing within the uterus, polycystic ovarian syndrome, which can have some endocrine implications in the way that a woman ovulates or in the quality of the egg cells. Also, women that have been through certain types of treatments, very extensive surgery, or women that have gone through radiotherapy or chemotherapy, these are all underlying conditions that may have an impact on fertility. And then we have other cases in which, you know, we may not have any of those underlying conditions, but for some reason, you know, we've transferred more than two or three good quality blastocysts and we're not achieving pregnancy, or we are achieving pregnancy, but we are having multiple miscarriages. So these are important challenges that we may face. They're not the most common, but they are something that we see every day in fertility clinics.
And I suppose, and I can imagine that that's one of the more difficult parts of your job, is seeing some of the patients, the pain that they've gone through, the whole process, and then to have an unsuccessful round of IVF or miscarriage. And I wonder what advice you give to those patients when that does happen that you feel can be helpful.
I mean, you know, I've heard people refer to IVF as a type of, or fertility treatments in general, as a type of a mental marathon, and I think that's one way in which you could think about it, because it tends to be a rather long process that depends on your cycle, so it can take some time, right? We go through a lot of waiting periods, waiting on, you know, for a scan to see if your follicle is growing, waiting for the result of an egg collection, waiting 24 hours until we know how many eggs fertilized, waiting for a week until we know how many embryos we have, you know, so many waiting periods that we often face during all sorts of fertility treatments. And I think that it's, you know, being mentally prepared for these challenges is just as important as being physically ready to undergo these types of treatments.
Yeah, and I'd say it's equally a mental and a physical endurance marathon.
Oh, definitely.
going through the whole process. And I know obviously the clinics in UK, they will offer, you know, mental health support, and, you know, equally I imagine, you know, at your clinic you also offer the same. And I suppose there'll be people in the UK, for example, so predominantly our listeners are based in the UK. If they're thinking about, so you're based in Spain, or there's, you know, clinics all over the world. If people are thinking about going abroad, what do they need to consider, think about, expect, especially in terms of the process? Could you tell me a little bit more about that?
Well, you know, some things that I think that, you know, people may sometimes be unaware of is that you do have an option to seek fertility treatment, you know, outside of your home. And I think that Spain offers a great alternative or a great option for people seeking IVF, people seeking certain types of genetic testing, and also for egg donation. I think that these are treatments that many patients that come from abroad are actively seeking. So I think that, first of all, knowing that that's an option is important. And then logistically, it may sound challenging, but there's actually quite some flexibility. I mean, you have the option of, you know, doing your whole treatment from start to finish in Spain, but also you have the option of coming to Spain for testing for some parts of your treatment. And then, you know, we work with multiple clinics abroad that we partner with, and we can work alongside of them. So that means that getting a scan, getting certain blood tests, you can do that at home and then send your results, and they're just as valid.
Yeah. And I suppose you'll have, for example, satellite clinics in the UK where you'll do many aspects of it. And it might be that you come for the end part, so the egg collection and transfer.
Absolutely.
To your clinic in Spain. And I suppose some people might have fear of, okay, if I've had a transfer, is it safe for me to fly back home? And what's your guidance around that?
Yeah, that is a common worry that we see in patients, but yeah, it's perfectly safe, and there's really nothing wrong with flying at that point in treatment.
Yeah, and I suppose for anyone thinking about Tom Ray as a clinic to investigate, to, you know, visit, what would you say it's different about how you work with patients, or your approach to compare to other clinics, for example?
I think that, you know, this is how we kind of do that whole 360 into how we kind of started out talking about experience, because, you know, Tombre has been around for over 45 years. And I think it's that experience and that know-how that, you know, that we can, that's something important that we can offer, you know, patients from all over the world, and knowing how to work with patients that are coming from abroad, that are coming for a few days, working with partner clinics all over the world, and maintaining the same quality that we would have if you know, lived across the street. I think that that's one of the things that Tombre does really well.
Yeah. And I suppose it's that wraparound service for clients from abroad. It's, you know, maybe advising on things like where to stay, or having that point of contact for any communications, and making arrangements and making sure that everyone's agendas are aligned, and having that kind of support all the way through.
Patients often mention is that it's very helpful to have a dedicated coordinator throughout your whole journey that is always acting as a not just as a middleman between, you know, the doctor and patients, but also between the lab and patients, and just making everything run smooth. And having someone to contact whenever you have questions, or, you know, when you didn't understand anything, or when, you know, you want to see your test results. I think that that's something that that patients greatly appreciate.
Yeah. And that's brilliant to hear that people feel supported all the way through, because, you know, as you know, it's such a complex and complicated process, especially doing it abroad. To have that support is phenomenal. So yeah, that's great. And yeah, it's been such an insightful conversation with you, and really appreciate you taking the time to share your experience and your knowledge. And I know that many listeners will find it really helpful. But is there anything you want to say before we leave for the listeners?
Well, I think we've covered most of it, but just as a reminder again, I guess, that you know, that for a patient that might be interested, we have this new location in Alicante, and, you know, we'd love to, you know, hear your story, see what ways, in which ways we could help out, and offer you like all the options that we may find adequate.
Brilliant. Thank you again so much, Dr. Abraham, and hopefully I'll get to visit the clinic one day. But no, thank you again for your time.
Thank you. And yeah, I would love to have you here.
What an episode. A huge, huge thank you to Dr. Abraham Zavala from Clinica Tombre. So much advice and guidance for anyone who is unfamiliar with IVF and don't know what to expect. I think this episode can really help you to understand what the different steps can look like and what kind of tests are involved. But also, I think what's really helpful is to understand some of the common misconceptions around fertility treatment. And I know for many who have experienced repeated implantation failure, this episode could also be really, really helpful. And I know for many, the idea of going abroad for treatment might feel quite scary, but I think Dr. Zavala outlined some things that might be really helpful to think about, and obviously to always do your own research. Now, details of where to find Dr. Abraham are in the show notes, and also more about Clinica Tombre. And if you would like some more information around treatment abroad, you can visit the Fertility Network website at fertilitynetworkuk.org. And if you found this episode difficult in any way, there are also details of where you can access support for your mental health. Now, we hope you found this episode really useful, and it would be great if you could like, subscribe and rate this episode. And we'd love to hear any feedback you have about the podcast to date, and make sure you don't miss any future episodes. Thank you for listening, and stay well.